Today is the 20th December 2003. We will continue our Dhamma talk about the Four Noble Truths. Before talking about the Four Noble Truths, I want to explain one aspect of Metta meditation. Today, in the interview, one meditator asked me, could he develop loving kindness and metta towards the dead person? Yesterday, in Dhamma talk, I left 2 points unexplained. Visuddhimagga said, the opposite sex, the members of opposite sex, must not be developed as a specific metta meditation. Male person should not develop loving kindness to female. A female also should not develop loving kindness to male. That's what the Visuddhimagga said. Because if a person specifies the opposite sex as the object of meditation, he may not have metta loving kindness. There may arise lust, raga in him. So, the members of a specific should not be treated as specific metta meditation. But through my experience in teaching metta meditation for many years, if a meditator has practiced metta meditation at least 1 month, this metta meditation is very good. He is skilled in development of metta. He can feel metta loving kindness for any person. So, through my experience, if a meditator has practiced metta meditation at least 1 month, he would have loving kindness metta instead of lust when he develop loving kindness towards the opposite sex. But if he is not yet skilled in metta meditation, he may have lust rather when he practices metta towards the opposite sex. And also Visuddhimagga said, that person should not be the object of a metta meditation, because that also specific metta, because by observing, by developing loving kindness towards that person, meditator cannot attain deep concentration. In this case, Visuddhimagga mentioned a story of a young bhikkhu who practices a specific metta towards his preceptor, who lived in distant places. A young bhikkhu lived in a monastery which is very far from his preceptor's monastery. His preceptor lived in different monastery far from him. The young bhikkhu practiced metta meditation, developing loving kindness towards his preceptor. Usually, he can attain concentration very easily and quickly by developing loving kindness towards his preceptor. One day, when the young bhikkhu practiced metta meditation, taking his preceptor as the object, he could not concentrate his mind well on the object. He tried again and again to develop loving kindness towards his preceptor, but he was in vain. He failed to attain concentration. Then the young bhikkhu went to nearby monastery where a senior Arahant monk lived. Then he asked the senior monk why he couldn't concentrate well when he practiced Metta meditation towards his preceptor. Then the senior monk, Arahant monk, told the young bhikkhu, "The young one, please find out the object." It means you should find out your preceptor to see personally. Then the young bhikkhu went to the monastery far from his one, where his preceptor lived. Then when he arrived there, he found his preceptor dead, passed away. Visuddhimagga mentions this story. So Visuddhimagga said the dead person should not be the object of a specific metta, but in unspecific metta, if we develop our loving kindness towards all living beings, that person is also included in all living beings. These are the two points I did not explain in my previous Dhamma talk. Now we proceed to the Four Noble Truths. The Four Noble Truths, as you know, are the first one, Dukkha Sajja, the truth of suffering. Dukkha Sajja, the truth of suffering, is both nama and rupa, mental and physical phenomena. Dukkha Sajja, the truth of suffering, is a prajñāya. The truth must be thoroughly realized. So nama and rupa, mental and physical phenomena or body mind process, must be thoroughly realized because they are dukkha sajja, the truth of suffering. Here dukkha in Pali, suffering in English, is of the three types in accordance with Buddhist Abhidhamma. The first one is dukkha-dukkha. Dukkha-dukkha is a common suffering which is known to every living being, such as pain, stiffening, itching, numbness, any accidents, any unhappiness, disappointment, sorrow, worry, sadness. All of these dukkha suffering are very evident to all living beings. So they are called dukkha-dukkha. Any physical pain or mental pain is dukkha-dukkha. When you feel, say, when you suffer from fever or flu, that is dukkha-dukkha. When you have any kind of disease, then it's dukkha-dukkha. The second one is viparinama-dukkha. Viparinama-dukkha. Viparinama-dukkha here means suffering produced by change. Suffering produced by change. Or suffering which is caused by change. That is viparinama-dukkha. That is so-called sukha happiness. So-called sukha happiness is viparinama-dukkha, the Buddha said. Because sukha happiness is not
everlasting,
not permanent.
It arises and then very instantly passes away. When it passes away, there arises a suffering dukkha. For example, while you are happy about your success in your business, if you hear any bad news about your family, that happiness has gone. Then it changes into unhappiness about your family. That unhappiness is dukkha suffering, because it's produced by change of happiness. The third type of dukkha is sankhara dukkha. Sankhara is both nama and rupa. Sankhara dukkha means arising and passing away. Every mental stage, every physical process is subject to arising and passing away. So they are dukkha, suffering, sankhara, dukkha. Every sankhara or every nama, mental phenomenon and physical phenomenon, arises and very instantly passes away. So this arising and passing away is sankhara dukkha, the Buddha said. When we observe the painful sensation, observing it, perceiving it, making mental note, pain, 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 attentively, energetically, then when our mind is well concentrated on the painful sensation, we see the pain, just unpleasant sensation, without being conscious of the location. For example, when we have the pain in the thigh, then we know to pain, pain, pain. When concentration is deep enough, we realize unpleasant sensation, the pain, separate from the tide. Later on, when concentration becomes deeper, we are not conscious of the location of the pain, that is the tide. We are not aware of a tide, the form of a tide. We realizing just painful sensation, just a painful sensation. When we realize that unpleasant sensation of the pain, without being aware of its location, that is a realization of a specific characteristic of dukkha vedana, the pain. When the concentration becomes deeper and deeper, then we realize that unpleasant sensation, the pain rises and then passes away, rises and then passes away. In this way, the unpleasant sensation rising and passing away very rapidly, then we feel, oh, sankhara is a dukkha, it's a subject to rising and passing away all the time, constantly, instantly. In this way, we come to realize the sankhara dukkha of the painful sensation. When we experience or realize the unpleasant sensation of the pain, it is a bhava lakana, realization of the bhava lakana, specific characteristic. When we realize or experience arising and passing away of the pain very rapidly, then it is a realization of impermanence, anicca, and also sankhara dukkha too. In the same way, when we observe the rising movements of fallen movements, attentively, precisely, gradually the mind becomes more and more deeply concentrated on each individual movement of the process, then we come to experience a series of movements of rising, a series of movements of falling. When our concentration becomes deeper on the process of movements, then we very clearly realize one movement arises and very instantly passes away, another movement arises and very instantly passes away. In this way, we come to realize a rising and passing away of the movements of the process very rapidly. At that time, we feel sankharas are subject to rising and passing away. It's not satisfactory, it's a suffering. This also realization of a sankhara dukkha. In this way, dukkha satya, mental and physical phenomena, must be thoroughly realized in this way. If we are able to thoroughly realize nama and rupa, dukkha satya, in this way, we have no attachment to this dual process of body and mind, nama and rupa. Attachment has been removed by realization of sankhara dukkha. Attachment to any nama or rupa, mental and physical phenomenon, is the cause of suffering, samudaya satya, tanha. Samudaya satya, the cause of suffering, is a pahadava, the truth which must be completely removed. Because when we are attached to any living beings or non-living things, we are sure to have suffering because of that attachment. So long as we have attachment to living beings or non-living things, we are sure to have a suffering dukkha. So attachment is the cause of a suffering, samudaya satya. If we want to live in peace and happiness, we must remove this attachment, samudaya satya. To remove this attachment, samudaya satya, we must thoroughly realize dukkha satya, or the three types of dukkha: dukkha dukkha, viparinama dukkha, sankhara dukkha. Through our own experience and meditation, to thoroughly realize, to thoroughly understand this dukkha satya, nama and rupa, we must practice magga satya. We must cultivate magga satya. We must develop magga satya. Magga satya is the truth of the way leading to the cessation of suffering, nirodha satya. This magga satya has the eight factors of the path. The first one, sammadhiti, right understanding. The second, sammasankappa, right thought. These two factors are panya group of wisdom. Panya khanda in Pali, khanda is a group, panya is wisdom. They are the group of wisdom, two factors. Then samavaja, right speech, samakamanda, right deed, and samajiva, right livelihood. These three factors are in the group of sila, sila khanda.
if you refrain from speech, then you have right speech, samavaca. If you refrain from wrong deed or bad deed, you have right deed, samatamanda. If you refrain from wrong livelihood, then you have right livelihood, sama ajiva. To refrain from wrong speech, wrong deed, and wrong livelihood, we have to observe the precepts, 5 precepts, 8 precepts, 9 precepts, 10 precepts, and so on. When we observe sila precepts, these precepts, silas, enable us to refrain from wrong speech, wrong deed, and wrong livelihood. For example, when we observe 5 precepts, the first precept, according to the first precept, we have to refrain from killing. The killing living beings is a wrong deed, bad deed. If we refrain from killing, it means refrain from bad and wrong deed, so we have right deed. When we observe sila precepts, these precepts, silas, enable us to refrain from wrong speech, wrong deed, and wrong livelihood. For example, when we observe 5 precepts, the first precept, accordingly, we have to refrain from killing. The killing living beings is a wrong deed, bad deed. If we refrain from killing, it means refrain from bad and wrong deed, so we have right deed. For another example, when we refrain from telling lies, musawada viramani, then we refrain from bad speech, wrong speech, so we have right speech. In earning our living, we have to refrain from these bad deeds and bad speeches, wrong deed and wrong speech. Then our living is right livelihood. So our sila precepts, which we are observing, enable us to refrain from bad deed, bad speech, bad livelihood. Then we have right speech, right deed, and right livelihood. So these three factors are in the group of sila, morality, sila khanda. Now we have explained 5 factors of the path. The first one, samadhi, right understanding. The second, samasangappa, right thought. The third, samavaca, right speech. The fourth, samakamanda, right deed. The fifth, sama ajiva, right livelihood. Then the third factor is sama vayama, right effort. Then the seventh one is sama sati, right mindfulness. The eighth one is sama samadhi, right concentration. Right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration, these three are in the group of concentration, samadhi khanda. All of these 8 factors are combined together called magga satya, the truth of the way leading to the cessation of suffering. When we want to practice magga satya or develop magga satya, is it very easy to do that? If you are mindful of whatever arises in your body and mind as it really occurs, then that is Magasajya, the truth of the way leading to the cessation of suffering. When you are mindful of rising movements and falling movement of the abdomen, that is Magasajya. When you are mindful of thinking thoughts, that is Magasajya. That Magasajya includes the eight factors. When you are mindful of a painful sensation, making mental note as a pain, perceiving the true nature of the pain, that is Magasajya. When you are mindful of lifting movements, pushing movements, and dropping movements of the foot, that is Magasajya. It includes the eight factors of the path. While you are chewing your food, observing chewing movement, noting chewing, that is Magasajya. When you are mindful of itchy sensation on the back, you note itchy, that is Magasajya. When you are mindful of stretching movements of the arm, when you stretch out the arms, making mental notes, stretching, perceiving actual movements of stretching, that is Magasajya. When you are mindful of lifting movements while walking, pushing movements, dropping movements, perceiving actual movements, then that is Magasajya. When you are mindful of, when you are aware of lifting movements of the foot, you should perceive the actual movements of the foot, making mental note as Kahanda Angkat Maju Turun. Kahanda Angkat Maju Turun. If you are able to know more, Nyantu or Sintu, then Hakam. Gradually, your concentration becomes deeper and deeper on the movement of lifting, pushing, dropping. Then you come to realize. When you know lifting, you realize upward movements. When you know pushing, you realize forward movements. When you know dropping, you realize dropping movements. In this way, you experience lifting movements, pushing movements, drop movements of the foot very well. When concentration becomes deeper and deeper, you are not aware of the form of the foot. What you are realizing, experiencing is just movements, the process of movements. Then, when you experience the process of lifting movement, pushing movement, dropping movements, that is a realization of a specific characteristic of a wind or air element, Vayodhatu. This is a right understanding of Samadhi. That's why I ask meditators, when you report your practice of walking meditation, what do you experience? How do you experience? When your concentration is not yet good enough, you just observe lifting, pushing, dropping, lifting, pushing, dropping. You perceive the foot is lifted, the foot is the form is lifted. You perceive the foot is pushed forward. You perceive the foot is dropped down. You do not realize the movement. You realize just the form of the foot. of that moment, you haven't yet experienced. You just practice mindfulness. When your concentration becomes deeper and deeper, because of attentive and energetic and precise noting of the movement, you come to realize many broken movements of lifting, pushing, dropping. Then you come to have experiencing the specific characteristic of a wind or air element, Vayu Dhatu. When you experience a process of a series of a broken movement while walking, you do not take this process of movement for a person, for a being, for a self, for a soul, because you are experiencing just movement. So realization of the movement removes the round you of a person, a being, a self or a soul, Sakaya Deity and other deity. While you can remove it, why can you remove it, the around you of a person, a being, Sakaya Deity, other deity? Because you have thoroughly realized Dukkha Satya, the movements of the food physical phenomena. That's why you are able to remove around you. So Dukkha Satya, both Maya Rupa, mental and physical phenomena, is a praniya which must be thoroughly realized by a meditator. Why do you realize Dukkha Satya, the movement of the food, physical phenomena, thoroughly? Because you practice Magga Satya, mindfulness and meditation. Mindfulness and meditation is Magga Satya, the truth of the way leading to the cessation of suffering. How this Magga Satya, mindfulness of the food, the movement of the food, includes the eight factors we should rightly understand. In the walking, we observe and note lifting, raising, pushing, dropping, touching, pressing. And also we note intention, lifting, raising, pushing, dropping, touching. To be able to note these movements very well, we need to put forth enough mental effort and practice. Without effort, we are unable to observe these movements. I want to rightly understand the difference between Taro and Sandhu. Because at the end of the Veda said Taro, Sandhu. Taro and Sandhu, yes. What's the difference between the two words? That mental effort which we put in the noting of the movement of food is a samvayama, right effort. Because of this mental effort, we are able to mindful of the movement of lifting, pushing forward, dropping. That mindfulness is a samasati, right mindfulness. When our mindfulness of the movements becomes a continuous, constant and powerful, the mind concentrated on each movement of lifting, pushing, dropping very well, that concentration is Samma Samadhi, right concentration. But sometimes the noting mind, the observing mind does not stay with the movement of the foot all the time. It attempts to go out, thinks about something else. At that time, one of a mental state that arises together with mindfulness keeps the noting mind to the movements, the object of meditation, directs the noting mind to the object, the movement of the food. That mental state which keeps the mind to the object of meditation is a samma sankappa, by thought. We have mental effort, samma vayama, right effort. We have mindfulness, samasati, right mindfulness. We have samma sankappa, samma samadhi, right concentration. We have samma sankappa, right thought, in our mindfulness of lifting, move, pushing, dropping, touching, pressing. These are the five mental faculties, the five mental factors which are working together in mindfulness and meditation. Yes, these four factors causes samma, dhiti, right understanding. When concentration becomes deeper and deeper, we come to realize each individual movement of lifting, each individual movement of pushing forward, each individual movement of dropping very clearly. Then here, right understanding, these are just movements. Neither a person nor a being, neither a self nor a soul. The insight that realizes or experiences these individual movements of lifting, pushing, dropping is a right understanding, samma dhiti. Then we have five workers. Factors. But there are also three other factors of the path. They are samavacha, right speech, samagamanta, right deed, samajiva, right livelihood. Since you observe the precepts, you have these three factors of a sila already. While you are having these five workers factors, are five. Then sila factors are three. Together, how many? Five plus three, 10. Huh? 8. Is it right? Yeah? This Magasajya, mindfulness and meditation, has the eight factors of the path. So it leads meditator to realize Dukkha Sajya and to remove Samudaya Sajya and experience Nirodha Sajya, the cessation of suffering, Nibbana. This is called Middle Path. Majjhima Patipada, middle path or middle way, Majjhima Patipada, which leads meditator to Nibbana. Majjhima Patipada, the middle path or the middle way, may all of you practice Majjhima Patipada, the middle way, and realize Dukkha Sajja thoroughly, remove Samudaya Sajja completely, and experience Nirodha Sajja, the cessation of suffering, and live in peace, happiness.